Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I am here with you until 9 o'clock tonight, our full Friday show. We got you taken care of on a lot of different fronts tonight. Our guest, Michael Beller, who writes for Sports Illustrated, he covers fantasy football. I am going to spend some time with him at 8 o'clock. I am also going to turn you over to him. So if you're getting ready for your fantasy draft and you've got some questions, 8 o'clock, we are going to really get into it with a guy who knows. 6:40, we will talk Bears football with Chris Emma. The Bears finally get a home game in the preseason. I had this moment last night where I went, man, the Bears preseason and training camp has gone on way too long. So the fourth preseason game for them to be tomorrow. There's some traffic advisories. I should let people know about this. The triathlon is going on downtown. So just so you know, the lakefront path to the museum campus, like there's going to be people on that. And there's a lot of different closures downtown. So just be prepared. If you're coming to Bears tomorrow, it usually would be that the Bears would have their like family day practice. I don't know if they just got rid of that and just exchange that out for the high school thing. They'd have their family day practice like the Saturday of Lollapalooza. And that was like a traffic nightmare because the Cubs would be in town too or something and all that good stuff. But the triathlon's going on this weekend. So just a heads up, if you are going to the Bears game tomorrow, then maybe give yourself a little bit of extra time because I don't want you frustrated. You're getting off the off ramp at 55 to LSD and you're mad, or you're trying to come down Roosevelt Road and you're like, why is this taking longer than usual? That's probably why. So, you know, here's some things that we're going to talk about tonight. We are going to spend an absurd amount of time talking about the Cubs because the Boat God does it again today. David Bodie with a walk-off to win it. More impressive was what I saw last night in person. And that's Cole Hamels. My goodness, that was great. So we're going to get into that. If you'd like to jump in and be a part of the conversation, 312-644-6767 is the number. I also think that at some point, probably more so in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll deal with some more difficult topics as it has to do with the Cubs and Daniel Murphy and the LGBTQA community. Michael Kopech and tweets and Urban Meyer just kind of being a bit of a tone deaf bag when it comes to the situation with his coach and that coach's abuse of his wife. So we'll get into that a little bit more once we get to 7 o'clock. We had some spirited discussions about all of that between myself and the production staff. By the way, the production staff is Herb Lawrence and Tony Gill. Herb's the EP. Tony's in charge of sound and bad takes on this show. That is a big portion of why we keep him around. Before I get to the Cubs, can I just say high school football starts tonight. Good luck and good health, more importantly, to all the kids that are playing. HF starts in Michigan City tonight. Go Vikings. I was looking because college football kind of starts tomorrow at some of the games. And Hawaii plays tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, so we get kind of an appetizer of college football tomorrow night. And then, you know, the BS fifth preseason game for the Bears, before for everyone else next week. Although that game might be important because Roquan Smith will probably play in that game and he needs to get hit before like they start like hitting for real on September 9th. But it was just weird. I was looking at the schedule. When I was looking at the schedule next week. Northwestern's got the great home schedule, right? We talk about it every bottom of the hour. They're going to play Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and everyone else at Ryan Field. Single game tickets, if you're looking, nusports.com is the way you can go pick up tickets. But I was looking, Northwestern starts with a Big Ten game? Is this right? They start playing Purdue on the road in West Lafayette? Huh. All right, so Big Ten football is back next week. Who knew? I didn't. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. All right, so let's talk about the Cubs. I was in attendance last night. I really like when I get the opportunity to spread my wings a little bit and do something that I don't ordinarily do. So when the bosses were like, hey, Pat's got some days off, would you like to do Cubs pre and post? I said, yes, I would, especially because it gives me a chance to work with Zach. I love working with Zach, and I think that he's done a tremendous job transitioning from doing play-by-play for basketball and occasionally football to doing baseball play-by-play. It's a different discipline altogether. It's a different discipline. But he's done a great job with it, so getting a chance to work with him is almost a no-brainer. So I did pre and post last night. I appreciate you listening and not judging me. I'm going to do pre and post Monday and Tuesday for the games against the Mets, which I know will be super special for Zach, him getting the opportunity to call those games. So it gave me a chance to, I like to go to the ballpark when I'm not working occasionally. So like last week I went to Wrigley to go see Darvish's simulated game and things have been moving in the right direction. Yesterday I was there so that I could do pre and post, but it gave me a chance to get inside the clubhouse, see what was going on with a couple of the press conferences. And I just wanted to take you in there for a minute with the Darvish thing. I find after being in the room, and I understand that there's a language barrier issue, and Darvish does his press conferences with a translator, even though I suspect he knows more English than he lets on, but I'm totally okay with players using a translator to help get their point across in English. I would say, I don't like that Major League Baseball doesn't use professional translators. And I think that that is some of the problem. And what I mean by that is that there are people who are trained specifically to translate from one language to another. You usually see them at the highest levels of government when you're talking about the United Nations, stuff like that. But there are people who go to school because there is an art to translating words. And baseball just kind of goes, hey, do you speak Japanese? Okay, great. You're going to be the translator. Or, hey, are you such and such's buddy? Great. Then you should do that. I would prefer if we had a more standard translation system in baseball, because I think that some of there are minor problems, but some of the minor problems that happen in translation situations would be avoided if we were doing that. All right, so there's my soapbox, and let me get off of it. But in sitting there in the room with Darvish yesterday, I walked away more sympathetic than I was, and I would put myself in the category of being sympathetic to Darvish anyway. But hearing him talk about, here's the effect that social media, and it will be a theme on tonight's show, the social media and interaction with fans had on Darvish. According to him, through the translator, Darvish was wondering if the issues that he was having with his arm were in his mind. So all the things that you were worried about, is he imagining this? He was going through that too, and he expressed relief through the translator when he got the actual diagnosis about what was happening with his elbow. And when he said it, it was a little bit surprising, and I think it was John Greenberg of The Athletic who followed up with the question, well, wait, is he saying that he thought it was in his mind. And I was really impressed that Darvish was as vulnerable yesterday talking about some of this stuff as he was. And again, this is stuff that can sometimes be lost in translation. But I was really impressed by that. And I would love to have an actual conversation with him at some point. Maybe I need to start learning Japanese to do it. But it was, you could tell, like, there was some body language stuff that let you understand that he doesn't like being depicted as being soft, and that those ideas did get to him. And sometimes we forget that we are dealing with human beings. And it was a good reminder yesterday for me that we are dealing with human beings. I'm still concerned about what happens because he didn't seem quite sure about what's going to happen next. If this is something that is going to require surgery after this 6-week period is over, will we hear that in the winter that he's going to have surgery? So it was an eye-opening experience to be inside that room yesterday to hear him talk about this. And again, it was through a translator, but to hear him talk about this stuff, I thought was eye-opening to get a glimpse of the man instead of just the quotes. And it's funny, because it's the same thing with Daniel Murphy, and I'll talk about that more in depth a little bit later on. But I think that one of the takeaways that I had from my experience yesterday is we, media et al., can do a better job in taking you into the room. And what I mean by that is not necessarily you seeing video. It's doing a better job of telling the story of what was going on in the room. And not everyone has that space. It's a difficult thing to do if you're writing. You have to be a really incredible writer to be able to convey that. I think when it comes to communicating, even now, I'm not sure that I'm doing the best job explaining to you what was happening, but I think that we need to do a better job at trying to convey what is going on in the room. And I think that there's a hustle to just get the soundbite, and then the soundbite becomes a story, but you need to tell the story around that. And I think that there's a bunch of really good writers that do their best as far as trying to convey it. Just from interacting with people after sharing video yesterday on Twitter, whether it was Darvish or with Murphy, that was the realization that I came to, that we, media, capital M, can do a better job of conveying what's happening in those rooms. And, you know, it's an eye-opening experience. So then I go upstairs and I do my gig, and I had a nice conversation with Pedro Strop yesterday about closing. I feel bad that he gave it up today, but he's been doing a great job in the place of Brandon Morrow, who no one knows when that guy is going to come back and what he's going to be when he comes back. Watching Cole Hamels last night was really cool. And watching that performance was cool because I thought, watching him early on, I was like, he's not sharp, but he's effective. Because there were some long counts. There was 3-1, 3-2 counts with him early on in the game, but he was getting out of it. He was getting ground balls. He was, you know, getting guys to swing and miss in those situations. And then you look up and you look at the pitch count when he's in the eighth inning, and you go, he's got an opportunity to go for a complete game here. So then I started looking up the stats on complete games because I'm part of the broadcast and that's part of my job. And I looked up, and I knew that the number had been low. But what I didn't realize, get this, there are only 5 guys so far this season that have more than 1 complete game. And the season high for complete games is 2. So there are 5 guys who have 2 complete games. And then there are 16 guys that have 1 complete game. With all the games that are played in Major League Baseball throughout a year, there's been less than 30 complete games this season. And it's compelling. I saw a tweet from Jeff Newage over at NBC Sports Chicago that last night's game was the highest rated regular season Cubs game that they've had this year. And I kept thinking about, I wonder if people, I'd love to look inside those numbers. I should have reached out to Jeff, but I would love to look inside those numbers and see if more people started watching as the game went on. Because it's not as rare as a no-hitter, but watching a guy go from beginning to end now in baseball is a rarity. And I wonder what the curiosity factor was as the game was going on. And I thought it was great. You're watching him like get into trouble in the ninth inning, and they've got a big enough lead where it doesn't really matter. But you're watching him get into trouble, and you see Joe kind of on the top step, and you're wondering he's going to take Cole Hamels out. And then he gets out of it. He gets the ball that he needs. He needs the double play in that situation. He gets out of it. I guess I had forgotten how cool complete games are because they're so rare. And there was an energy in the ballpark that I thought represented. It was a perfect night to do it. From a weather standpoint, I kept thinking about that too. If it's a typical August in Chicago and you have a 90-degree first pitch at 7:05, does he wear down easier? Is Joe more willing to go to the bullpen to try and save him than allowing him to go back up there and hit again late in the game and then sending him back out to the mound? There's a lot that went into it. What Hamels has provided for the Cubs, I never thought that it was going to be this. A .79 ERA in the month of August. So since he's been acquired, you know I don't care about the win stat, but the team is undefeated when Cole Hamels plays. And he's got a .79 ERA. And he's one of 6 pitchers in Cubs history to have an August where he goes undefeated and has a sub-1 ERA. It's rare. What I was expecting from Cole Hamels was you're going to get professional innings. You're going to get a guy who's going to go out there and give you 6 innings, and you're going to be able to turn it over to your bullpen. He's been so much more than that. And think about the situation that the Cubs find themselves in right now. Darvish is done for the season. Chatwood's on the DL. Montgomery's on the DL. You're running out of guys. And the hope is that Kyle Hendricks and Jose Quintana take the next 6 weeks of the season and kind of turn back into the guys that they have always been. But when you needed it most, that front office went out and made a move that now looks genius. Now, you know, we can, in 2 weeks, maybe it turns around and Hamels gets hit. But for right now, that looks like the best move at the trade deadline is the Cubs acquiring Cole Hamels. If you want to compare it to Verlander last year, go ahead. If that ends up being the case, it's great for the Cubs because they desperately needed this. They needed someone to kind of step in and go, look, I understand that you've got bullpen issues and I'm going to do my best to save your bullpen. So the fact that in the games leading up to today, the 2 games leading up to today, you had Hamels and Lester cover 14 2/3. Is great. You don't have to then tax your bullpen. You don't have to wear guys out. So it was fun being in the house yesterday for that. I'd love to know if you were watching the game, if you stuck around to see if he was going to complete the game. Because the game was pretty much over. The Cubs were up big. Were you, and be honest, like, don't be, yeah, totally, I watched every inning, if you didn't. But if you did, I would like to talk with you. 312-644-6767 is the number. I'd like to know what was compelling about it if you did stick around. If that was the reason that you stayed with our broadcast here on The Score, or if that's why you stayed with the television broadcast of the game, was to see, you know, a Cubs win, or if it was to see if Hamels was going to go out for the night. I guess the other question in that, would you have turned the channel had Joe taken Hamels out of the game? I love getting consumer feedback on this. Because there's a part of me that feels like you would have with the quickness. If they had gone to the bullpen in the eighth or in the ninth, I feel like you'd be like, okay, Cubs win. Let me get on with my Thursday night. There's some bad football I can watch. I can get ready for the workday tomorrow. All that good stuff. So we're going to take your phone calls next, okay, on this subject. You can also text us if you wish, 670-11. The phone number is 312-644-6767. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score. This hour, the show is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 9 o'clock. We'll talk some football with Chris Emma coming up in a few minutes. I want to get to your phone calls about Cole Hamels and the Cubs last night. Javier Baez, by the way, if you didn't know, the home run that he hit in the third inning, 481 feet, that ties Avi Garcia of the White Sox for the second longest homer in the major leagues this year. 489 is the longest so far this season. I have a hypothesis about Javi's home run. Here it is. Because of the video boards, not being able to see a ball hit onto the street to its completion makes it seem like the home run is shorter than it actually is. That ball was destroyed last night. How fun is Javi Baez?
And yeah, and that was not 481.
What'd you think? 500?
Plus.
That's what I think, but StatCast says 481. Gene's out in Tinley Park. Gene, did you stick with the game last night?
Yes, we did. Actually, they were up 7-1, and I was with my wife, and we said, I got to see if this guy can finish his game. We were excited because we see nothing but Chatwood this year. We've been to 12, 13 games. In fact, we thought he was supposed to pitch today, and we were excited when he got thrown out of it. But it was awesome. The best part was when the pitching coach came out to talk to him, one out, and he left him in there, the crowd went nuts.
Oh, yeah. When he went back to the mound, it was – people were excited, and they did not want to see Joe. They did not want to see Jim Hickey. Like, just let Cole do his thing. I'm pretty sure I saw Cole, like, walking down the street with his family when I left Wrigley Field yesterday. Just, like, nothing happened. Just getting used to the city.
I mean, really, would you recognize Cole Hamels?
Yes.
Although, I mean, you would, but Cub fan in general?
I mean, he's Bryant-level handsome. So
he's great-looking, yeah.
He's like Chris Bryant 10 years from now.
California cool.
Well, he is disrespecting Chris Bryant.
I'm saying
disrespectful.
We're setting the bar at handsome at Chris Bryant, and Cole Hamels lives up to that level of handsome.
Cole Hamels might be a little bit better looking.
I don't disagree.
All right, guys, stop.
If you appreciate a mature looking man, Cole Hamels is your guy. But yes, he is Bryant level handsome. Frankfurt and Don. Hey, Don, you're on The Score.
Lawrence, Don, first-time caller. Thanks for having me on your show.
No problem. What's on your mind, Don?
Lawrence, man, I watched that game, and I thought it was just totally awesome the way Madden just let this guy finish the game. I mean, from first inning up to the ninth, this guy, it seems like he's rejuvenated this Cubs team. He seems like he's taking them on all by himself.
Well, it's good when you have a pitcher that's able to perform at that level. I mean, it's a I wouldn't have, like, when they made the move, I wasn't like, man, that's a bold, game-changing move. I don't know if any of us felt that way. I don't know if the Cubs felt that way. But you take that guy out of Arlington, and that's the bad ballpark. Coors is bad, but that infield is fast. In Texas, you give up a lot of hits there. And him moving over to the National League has made a real, moving back to the National League has made a real difference. So far, so good. Joliet and Bob. Hey, Bob, you're on the score.
Lawrence, the word is confidence. He expressed confidence last night. And Joe, by the fact that he let him out there was enough rope there that he could keep him out there. If the game was 3-1, I think it might have been a different story with the bases loaded, all that. But he let him stay out there. It was a confidence factor for the entire team. And if you go back to when Jim Hickey went out there into the ninth, I think it was the ninth inning with the one out, and Rizzo had that face on again. Like, hey, man, this is your game. Let's go out and win this. You know, let's finish it up.
Well, I'm not going to give credit to Rizzo's face on that. But I do think you're right. I think if this is a closer game, we might see Joe manage it differently. I wonder what that means going forward or if it means anything. Is this one of those things where in a playoff situation, he might let Hamels go longer than he ordinarily would? I don't know. Baileyville and Peggy. Hey, Peggy, you're on the score.
Hey, guys, that was compelling. Compelling baseball. I felt like I was listening to a no-hitter.
That's so interesting that you say that because it's weird, Peggy, being in the ballpark, that's kind of how it felt. Because everyone was kind of into it, like every pitch and every two strikes, like people were into it. But that's so weird that it happened on just the complete game.
Well, now, has any other Cub pitched a complete game this year?
No.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
This is just a shot in the arm, baby.
There have only been 26 around baseball. Like that's crazy. There have been less than 30 complete games around baseball. Out to Lyle and Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence. Yeah, so I was watching the broadcast. And first of all, I was stuck around, obviously, just because it was good watching the Cubs being good again. And then Coles was just dominating. And I was curious to stick around. I was going to say, man, can this guy do it in 100 pitches and 9 innings? That would be pretty amazing. So I was just watching the pitch counts. And then, you know, like you just said, they flashed up the statistic that the Cubs have not had a complete game from any pitcher since September of last year, which – to me, it was shocking, and you just said that there's only been 26 in major leagues, which is even more shocking to me. But it was just great to watch that kind of control and domination.
So Mike, you stayed watching because you wanted to see if he could finish it.
Yeah, because I was watching the pitch count. I was curious to see if he could, you know, there's a point there where before the ninth inning kind of got away from him, where like, can this guy do it in 100 pitches? That was more my curiosity watching it. But then,
right? Could he pull a Maddox? That's what they call a Maddox. If you complete game and you do it under 100 pitches, even at 114, I'm like, that's not, you're not killing a guy at 114. Had it been 130, we've been hovering around 130. I think that becomes a problem. Marcia is out in Manuka. Hey, Marcia, you're on the score.
Hi. I was really excited about that game yesterday. I thought Hamill did a wonderful job. I did get a little nervous, though, when his pitch count got up to about 111, and Joe Mann, you know, took a first step on the stairs there.
Uh-huh.
But I was thrilled that he decided to hold back and let him finish the game.
It was a lot. It was a lot of fun. Like it was so weird because it felt like a communal watch. And like I said, that tweet that here, I'll read the tweet so I can get the numbers right on it because I was fascinated by it when I saw. That Jeff had tweeted this out today. NBC Sports Chicago posted its highest-rated Cubs game of the season last night. Number one in the market. Peak audience of 260,000 homes. That's crazy. That's really crazy. We'll continue to talk more baseball. We are going to check in on the Bears. Chris Emma from our staff is going to talk with us about Bears-Bills tomorrow. Well, he's going to talk about it with us today, but the game is tomorrow. We'll do that next here on The Score.
The Bears are taking on the Chiefs tomorrow on the lakefront. We need a preview. Our guy Chris Emma is going to provide that for us. He does incredible work on 670thescore.com. It's where you can find his work. You can also find him on Twitter at CEmma670. He joins me now. What's up, Emma?
What's up, Lawrence? Happy Friday.
Same to you. What's important tomorrow from what we're going to see between the Bears and the Chiefs?
You know, number one, you got to start with health, of course. It's that third game where you're going to be playing your starters deep into the third quarter, if not all the way through. So you want to come out with your starters intact and with everybody you're counting on for this regular season to be healthy. But I'd say you really want to see growth from this offense. I mean, it's going to be a lot of Mitchell Trubisky out there. It's not going to be the full offense you'll see come week one, but you're going to see a better look at what they're going to be running here come the regular season. What I'm going to be looking for, as I was last week as well, is seeing the timing between Mitchell Trubisky and his receivers. And by that, I mean, you know, how they're going through their routes, how quickly he gets the ball out, at what part of these routes is he throwing the ball. This offense is all about timing, and it's something Trubisky and Nagy reiterated this week in speaking about their offensive plan. So I want to see how Mitchell Trubisky showed that kind of comfort within the offense and specific to the timing elements.
Who's going to play of importance tomorrow and who's not going to play?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I the way they've done it this week has been simulating a regular season game week, and I'd imagine they will have most of their starters playing. You know, the exceptions, of course, will be Roquan Smith, who's unlikely to play. I'd be stunned if he was out there after missing the last 3 days with hamstring tightness. It's just another setback for him in a preseason that's been unfulfilling to this point. Aaron Lynch has made progress. He was back working with the Bears at least on Thursday, but he was not fully participating, and he won't be out there tomorrow. You know, they'll evaluate some of these other guys who have had some minor injuries along the way. But, you know, what they're going to try to do this is playing a regular season type game. And with that comes trying to get the starters out there and gain them that comfort, especially ahead of that game next Thursday against the Bills, where I think any key player is going to be out for that.
Do you think that Roquan will play in that game?
Ideally. I mean, if he's healthy, and he should be out there. They've been managing this as a precautionary measure. Matt Nagy said it was a regular season situation and a normal situation that he likely would have been practicing through it, but they have to take every precaution because they still don't know exactly what his game level shape is or that football level shape is. When you suffer a hamstring an ailment like this where, you know, it's not a tear, it's not anything severe, but it's a lingering issue, you have to look at it through the prism of the game readiness or the football readiness, and you consider that a setback, not to mention the fact that you don't want to put too much on his plate where he's going to be overdoing it and risking his health even further. So ideally, he's back out there Monday with the Bears and practicing ahead of that game Thursday against the Bills at Soldier Field. But right now, I mean, his status is in jeopardy here.
How much do they value him getting on the field and actually playing before they play against Green Bay?
I'm sure they'd love to, but the thing that Matt Nagy said, he reiterated yesterday, was the idea of weighing the health elements versus the experience he could gain. And they've said all along, since he first arrived, 10 days ago now, with the Bears at Halas Hall to this point with the injury, you don't want him to overdo it. You want to make sure he's absolutely ready to go here. So given the fact that he does have this hamstring lingering, they're going to take every precaution. And that takes the priority, even if it means getting on the field and experiencing that game level. And to be honest with you, Lawrence, I mean, this is a guy who's played at a high level. I mean, Georgia, he played in the national championship game, Butkus Award winner, All-American. You feel good about his experience and how it translates to the NFL level because he's played at the highest level of college football. I mean, the very highest. So he spoke also this week before, of course, getting hurt of the similarities between that defense at Georgia to what the Bears run now and specific to assignments at the inside linebacker position. So he feels good. He feels like he's got a positive grasp both from his time at Georgia, but also established through the offseason program.
Yeah, I'm not as much worried about him picking things up as I am him not having been hit in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, players talk about how you kind of have to get yourself prepared to be hit. And if it's been, what, 8 months or whatever since he's been hit, to go into that first game and have not been hit, I think that there will be some adjustment that has to happen.
You know, that's a good point. I agree with you on that, but I only agree to an extent in that. And it's kind of the same with the rest of the NFL. These training camps are not the physical, hard-hitting, slobber-knocking practices that you had back in the day. So a lot of these guys really don't experience the first amount of significant tackling in that position if you're running back being tackled until you get through the preseason and into the regular season. So somebody like a Danny Trevathan that only has, you know, a handful of tackles this month at this point, and, you know, we're talking about preseason tackles, you don't get a whole lot of full contact in the preseason portion of practices and into training camp. So I think he'll be, you know, he needs to dial it up a little bit and get to be that kind of linebacker we know he can be with. It's what we're talking about, Roquan Smith. But I'd say that'd be the same for Danny Trevathan and a lot of other linebackers in the NFL.
Talking with Chris Emma, who covers the Bears for us here on The Score. He will be at Bears-Chiefs tomorrow. Who do you have your eye on tomorrow?
You know, Isaiah Irving's a guy I'm really going to be watching closely because I think he's probably going to be the starter lining up an outside linebacker. And if that's not really reassuring to you as a Bears fan, then, you know, you have every right to feel that way because this outside linebacker position had a ton of questions going into this year. And it was before Leonard Floyd suffered the fracture in his hand, before Aaron Lynch missed the entire new training camp and, you know, has really not done anything to this point that's outside of some light work on Thursday. So Sam Hacho was the, you know, a steady piece to this defense, and I think we talked about it earlier this week, Mark. I mean, it's a very likable guy, and you feel good about his value, but you'd rather have a Leonard Floyd or Aaron Lynch out there. Isaiah Irving's different in that he's a second-year player who is really starting to flash some upside for this coaching staff. Vic Fangio really has an appreciation for him. So does outside linebackers coach Brandon Staley, who really sees some positive traits in this guy as a pass rusher. And, you know, he can be a, you know, we're talking about that steady presence, somebody who mans the outside linebacker position well. But he also could be a player who really surprises and emerges into a role as an edge rusher there. So he's somebody I think is going to see significant playing time tomorrow, in part because they just don't have a lot of other bodies out there. I mean, Kasim Edebali is a veteran who's going to get some time as well. He's got some looks with the first-teamers out there. But Isaiah Irving's a player with a ton of intrigue that I'm going to be watching. And I'll give you one more along the way. I mean, James Daniels, hey, you know, that guy was very, very candid about it yesterday with a question I had about the preseason for James Daniels to this point and how he compares to the player they drafted out of Iowa. And Nagy basically admitted that moving him around between guard to center and back to guard has set him back a little bit. And it's not allowed him to grow comfort as a rookie offensive lineman. So he's going to be playing guard. I don't see him playing any center tomorrow or really any time moving forward here until they see the kind of growth that they want out of this player. Because while his technique is very fundamentally sound and there's some great traits coming out of that Iowa program, he's also a guy who's very young. He's 20 years of age, and he's got a lot of room to grow as an offensive lineman. He's behind a player like an Eric Cush and an Earl Watford who bring that kind of veteran stability that somebody like Harry Hiestand values. So James Daniels is behind right now, and they're going to play him at guard. He's going to get significant time tomorrow, and they're going to try to see if he can get that caught up with the rest of the pack.
Emma, I appreciate it. Thanks. I'll see you tomorrow.
Take care, Lawrence.
It's Chris Emma from our staff. That's funny because I feel like someone on this show was talking about that the night that James Daniels was drafted, that perhaps you should put him at one position and allow him to learn that instead of taking a 20-year-old and saying, play the toughest position on the offensive line, learn that, and then learn guard at the NFL level too. Only I knew who that person was. Wish he were here right now. This segment was brought to you by Subway. Check out 3 signature wrap flavors to savor at Subway restaurants. Try the classic style of the turkey Italian melt. Get yourself some bold taste with the Chipotle Southwest steak and cheese, or enjoy the tangy flavor of buffalo chicken wrap. Subway, make it what you want. By the way, I always give this tip whenever we do the Subway ad. Love the cookies. I will sometimes just go into Subway, get 3 cookies for a dollar. They're great. Subway. Do the damn thing. That should be their slogan. It's not, but it should be. Following up on a couple of text messages on our Cole Hamels conversation, 847 text says, Lawrence, enjoyed your work on Cubs Radio. You are a natural. Well, thank you. That's very nice. I appreciate that you, the Cub fan, know that I'm a White Sox fan, but you should know that if I come there to do your game, I'm going to do your game. I take a lot of pride in that. I love that the Cubs have asked me occasionally to fill in on their broadcast, and that everyone knows what I'm about. You see it on the social media. But I take a lot of pride in the fact that if someone invites me into their house, I'm going to be a good guest. And I like going over there and covering them and working on the broadcast. And it's so great. Like, I'm so – you have no – like, there's not a lot of people in this business that I call brother, but Zach is like my brother. And seeing him get this opportunity is just wonderful, and I'm really happy for him. He's seen a lot of losing. Me and Zach have seen a lot of losing covering the Bears and doing play-by-play for DePaul. So the fact that he gets to see some winning right now is cool. Ron Coomer is cooler than a fan when Pat is in there. I love working with him, too. It's awesome.
This will allow you to do it again, right?
Yeah, Monday and Tuesday, I'll be back doing Cubs pre and post. So I don't think I've done a Bulls pre and post, although I guess that could be on the table at some point this year.
Cash needs a day off.
If he needs a day off, I'd be more than willing to do it. But I've now done pre and post for every team but the Bulls, all the five majors, but the Bulls.
When Jesse called off for a Hawks game?
Yeah, I did pre and post. When we had the Hawks back on the score, there were two nights where I had to do pre and post for the Hawks, which was crazy. It was a lot of fun.
Tony is like surprised that we had the Hawks.
Yeah,
like, ugh.
Tony,
the horrible years.
We had the Hawks like right before they had Kane and Taves.
What was the play-by-play and color combination?
It was Weidman, right?
Yeah, Weidman. John
Weidman was on the – he's really fantastic, by the way.
Was it Weidman and Gardner?
Yeah. But we had pre and post. The whole shebang, Tony.
It's kind of – I kind of like equate it to – we gave up the Hawks the 2 years, I think, before they won the Cup, just like WGN gave up the Cubs 2 years before they won the World
Series. And then we got the White Sox right after they won the World Series. Now, granted, they won 90 games the next year. The first year they were on the score, they won 90 games, and they finished third in the division.
Yeah, our whole White Sox relationship was 2008, only playoffs that we went to. That was great. I loved the White Sox broadcast.
Man,
still,
I'll just – from
people with Ed and DJ.
From a logistical standpoint, it was perfect for me because the way the ballparks are. Wrigley is still smaller and doesn't have a lot of space. Over at White Sox, I would do my show from there. So I could go cover more games and then just go up into Ronji's booth and do the show and be out or stick around for the game. At Wrigley, it's a little tighter, you know? Like, there's a space for me in the back where I could probably do the show, but it would be very disruptive to the press box. And I'm not about that life. I don't want Sully punching me in the face because I'm too loud. I was there yesterday. I would like to talk about a couple of different subjects. Daniel Murphy and his impact on and off the field of him joining the Cubs, the responsibility of teams. I want to discuss that when it comes to Michael Kopech. I know that Herb's got some strong opinions on the news about him. We'll talk about, and I want to talk about Urban Meyer. I'll see if I can weave all of these together, and hopefully we can have a mature conversation about it all. That's next here on The Score.